You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron. I'm your host today. And I want to thank you for just showing up. We'll take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And today, boy, do I have a treat for you. One of our good friends is on today. And you're going to see this guy is super fun, engaging. He makes some of the most difficult things exciting. And he has just been a super huge rock star for us. And so you're going to love this. Now, if you're here for the first time, some of you were just joining us during the conference last year, where over 38,000 of you just joined, and it was a lot of fun. And you're going to see, I got a chance to meet Tom and other great educators, and some of you were young dentists, some of you were dental students, and some of you have even sent me notes recently, like, what is this podcast thing that you're doing? I'm like, come on over and join us. So, and it's crazy because I was telling Tom before we went live, like, we do all these videos. You guys never watch them, but you listen to audio downloads like crazy. We just eclipsed the 140,000 audio download mark, which is nuts. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But here's what I do know. If you're listening to Spotify or Stitcher or iTunes, wherever you're listening to it, if you're driving, pull over. But do me a favor, go down to the subscribe button and just hit the subscribe button, because I want you to keep showing up. You're going to see every single week, I'm going to bring you a brand new expert in dentistry who's going to bring you best practices so you can create a better practice and a better life. And I don't want you to miss out. Also, if you haven't joined our private Facebook group, make sure you join us over there, where over 13,000 of you are over there being active, just asking questions. And it's an awesome place where you'll see like-minded people just trying to help other people. And then I always get this question, like, Kirk, what do you guys do? Well, we're a practice coaching company. If you're a dentist and you own your own practice and you're thinking, man, I do love dentistry, it could be just a little bit easier. I'm kind of struggling with my team culture or profitability, or I don't like my schedule. It could just be a little bit better, but I'm so busy. Well, you're the perfect person to go over to actdental.com and check it out. You're going to see we got a great team of coaches. I have one goal for you as a coach. I want you to get out of your car, walk towards your building and say, I love this. I love how I'm, now it's not perfect, but I love how I do it. I love my days. I love how this is working. So if you're not experiencing that, join us over at actdental.com, where we can help you create a better practice and a better life. Now, I want to introduce my friend, Tom. You and I have become good friends in the last year. And okay, now I got to preface this, because you were introduced to me and I'd heard your name, and I heard it again. And then one of my buddies was like, no, you got to get Tom on. And he's great. And so we had you on, and I'm like, I don't know, pharmacology, I don't, how fun is this going to be? And I remember after it was over, I talked to Bill Robbins and Bob Martz, and they're like, dude, that was outrageously fun. And we had you back again and again and again and again. And you were like our monthly treat where you would just take these things that were just mundane, not necessarily mundane, extremely important, and just gave us great context. And I remember the feed. I mean, there was one particular day, there had to be 3,000 people on the Zoom, and it was just blowing up. Like, this is just awesome. Have this guy back. Now, I know who you are. A lot of people in the community know who you are. But if I'm just joining us for the first time, who the heck is Tom Viola? I don't know who you are. What do you do? Like,
so who's Tom Viola? So my name is Tom Viola, which, again, not many people know of me outside of some circles in dentistry. But I've been involved in dentistry for over 30 years, mostly as a teacher. I've been teaching pharmacology to dental students and dental hygiene students forever, but got involved in speaking probably around 2001 or so. And since have increased my ability to speak over the course of time. So now I do it full time. And I have to tell you, Kirk, I love it. And I think what you said before matters the most. You said it's about people helping people. It's right. Not so much about, you know, getting information out there, getting education out there. It's getting information and education out there that's actually helpful, that's useful in daily practice. And that's what I make my livelihood doing. I enjoy teaching and I enjoy speaking. But the greatest reward for me is actually having people email me later or text me later, Facebook me and say, hey, you know, I really learned something in your course, something I actually use every day. Or, hey, I went to that course you use and I remember what you said that day and I still use that in practice today. That to me is the greatest compensation and the greatest reward I could have in this profession. And I have to say, I love dentistry. I mean, some people think of dentistry as sort of like, well, there's medicine and then there's dentistry. And I've always looked at it as, medicine and dentistry are conjoined. You know, we're always going to be arm in arm with our brothers and sisters on the medical side. And lately, you've seen that convergence more than ever. You've seen that convergence between medicine and dentistry and the fact that we have to deal with this oral systemic connection.
Yeah, it's so awesome. Now, there's so many things that are special about you. And, you know, during a time where we didn't know what this was all about, we were hoping it was going to end. You know, we had you on and I remember you going like, I had COVID and you were the first human being that I had spoken to that actually had the virus. And my first thought was, are you okay? And you're like, it's hard. Like, I'm just going to tell you. And then to watch you come out of it and it keeps showing up and educating, you are like the resident expert who's like, no, I've had it. I know what you guys are dealing with. Yep. I hope you guys make it through. All that stuff. Now, I'm going to say a couple more things because I'm just a big fan of yours. If you don't follow Tom on social media, you got to, because it is awesome and you're going to learn it. Also, if you're looking for a great speaker for your study club or anything, this guy has not hours, but like months of stuff, you know, like we're going to have you back again and again and again. And you were saying before we live, I think we could talk every week and you'd have brand new stuff, especially with what's going on in the world today. And it's so cool. Now, today, our first topic that this is your first time on the podcast. And today we're just going to open up a really important thing. I asked you before we went live, like, what's something near and dear to your heart that's really an opportunity for dentists that they don't take advantage of? And you explain this topic. So let's talk about the why before the how. Tom, why is this so important in dentistry?
Well, again, it's because of that whole idea of medicine and dentistry being separate. And I've always said they've been conjoined. You know, a lot of our patients don't even get that. I mean, I've been in the clinic with my students 1,000 hours at a time listening to them talk to patients. And a lot of patients still say, why do you need to know about my blood pressure? Why do you need to know about the medications I take? You're working here. You know, you're not working here. Why do you need to know about this? This makes no difference to you. And I've had to say to these folks, now, again, let's be fair. I do practice in New York City. So there is a bit of an angle there. So sometimes I have to say, well, last time I looked, this is connected to this. So sorry, I'm going to have to know about this and this. But if you want me to take care of that, I've got the chainsaw in the garage. I'll be right back. And it usually gets people laughing like, okay, well, I guess I get the point. The head's connected to the rest of the body. So I guess you need to know a little bit about it. But even though that's a bit of a, you know, an analogy, it goes beyond that because we really sometimes miss those things when we take medical histories, when we inquire about a patient's medications. There are some things we miss because even we don't think it pertains to dentistry when in fact it does. I've heard 1,000 speakers on this topic. I've heard 1,000 hours of, you know, here's what you need to know about xerostomia and medications. it goes well beyond medication-induced xerostomia and even system-induced xerostomia. It has to do with, do you know enough about the patient's history, the medical history, to make well-informed, good clinical decisions in your treatment planning? And the only way you're going to really know that is if you know the patient well enough. And the only way that's going to happen is if you know their history. So medical histories cannot be more important than almost anything else you do in your practice, because without knowing your patient intimately and sufficiently, you're not going to be able to make those decisions. And that can lead to bad things like malpractice and liability and bad outcomes for our patients, which none of us want.
Right. Let's talk about the natural inherent challenges with this important tool. You know, you've got one side of it where you see this all the time. Dentists, I've been doing this for 20 years. My assistant like lets me know what's on there. So you got the dental team that doesn't spend a lot of time really looking at, but then you also have the patient, you know, do they disclose 100% what's on there? So talk about the natural inherent challenges of this important tool.
Okay. So from the patient side of things, right? It's I've often said this, I'll say it 1,000 times. The greatest blessing ever bestowed upon dentistry was the fact that you can take the patient's medical history directly from the patient themselves. They're right there, right? What more convenience can there be? And the greatest curse ever inflicted upon dentistry was that you can take the patient's medical history directly from the patient themselves. As in, if they don't know, you're not going to know. And if they don't want you to know, you're not going to know. But right. you can overcome that obstacle when you realize that all you really need is a list of the medications and a good working foundational knowledge in pharmacology, and then say, okay, based on what I know about this drug and what it does, I know they have potentially this condition. I know, therefore, if they have this condition and they're taking this medication, what potential dental implications are in store for me and what treatment planning modifications I have to make. So really, it's just a matter of getting it from the patient directly. But here's where we sometimes mess up. Look at it from our perspective. We don't ask the right questions sometimes. So, for example, I get hired once in a while as a consultant for dental offices. They bring me in as a consultant, and they say, I want you to listen to the intake. I want you to look at the whole intake process. Tell us what we could be doing better to optimize patient care. The first day I'm there, I'm the wallflower. Half the time, people don't even know I'm there. They're just like, who's this guy in the corner? I'm just standing there, and I'm listening. And I will tell you the thing I hear the most. In the beginning of the medical history, this is the question that gets asked. Any changes to your medications? And immediately the answer is nope. Why? Because it's easier to say no than it is to give me, the dental clinician, the information I need to be able to fill in the medical history. So conditionally, I say no, and everybody's like, okay, no, and we move on. But we missed so much of what we could have grabbed from that interaction. So I've often said this, I'll say it again. If you're going to take a medical history, at the very least, a couple things have to happen. One, got to build a good team around you. You've got to invest the time and the money, if necessary, in your team to be able to teach them how to take a good medical history, what questions to ask, and how to ask leading questions and open-ended questions to get the patient to give up the information that maybe they don't want to give up, but maybe they don't know to give up. Okay, so that's the first thing. That way it takes the burden off the dentist because the team is filling that information. But the dental assistant or the dental hygienist that's taking information can only record the information that's important if they know it's important. So you've got to teach them the importance of asking the right questions and what information is necessary and what's not. But then the other thing is ask the right questions. So you've had your teammate, you've had them ask the questions. Now you ask the question too, but in a different way. So your team member could say, you know, any change to your medications or what's new with your medications or something like that. But I have often said it's got to be 3 questions from the clinician who's actually intimately involved in that patient's care. The first question is, not the D word, drugs, not the M word, medications. The first question is, what do you take? Now, of course, I'm from Brooklyn and I practice in New York, so my take on this is a little different. I often say it like this. What do you take? Say a little attitude, okay? And that way, what do you mean? Do you take stuff? Well, yes. Well, what is it? Okay, so that way you get them a little bit on like, well, should I be telling you all this? Yes, I need to know what you're taking, but I don't want to say the word D, drug, because that means what? You're going to think little vials. Or M, medications. Again, you're going to think little vials. I want to know everything. I want to know the prescription drugs you take, the non-prescription drugs you take. I want to know about the over-the-counter supplements you take. I want to know about the stuff you do on the weekends. I want to know everything, okay? Give me all of it. And that way I think I can get the best information I can from you. So that's question number one.
Wait, stay right there too, because I love that. I absolutely love that. Now, two things. Number one, Tom, nobody teaches this in dentistry, or there's very little training on this, correct?
Correct. So if I've often said this, I teach it to my students, I teach it to my hygiene and dental students. And when I go out there and I start speaking, I've got people in the audience come to me and say, I've never heard this before. No one's ever told me this before. No one's ever said I had to ask these questions. I just follow the form right down. And that's, in my opinion, I did a good job taking the medical history. No one ever said to me, I've got to take the time to answer these open-ended questions. Now, the flip side of that, Kirk, is when people say to me, are you stupid, Viola? How can I possibly have time to ask all these questions? I only got 45 minutes to an hour. And by the time you get through with your lecture that I should be taking blood pressures on everybody and medical histories on everybody, that's 20 minutes right there. I've left no time for the procedure. Right. That's why you got to build a good team around you. That's why you got to share the responsibility and share the wealth, right?
Yeah. Now, you may get in this, the question number two and number three, but let's say I'm a dental assistant and I say, what do you take? And it's a drug I've never heard of. Am I going to ask an additional question on that when it comes to a medication that they mentioned?
Yep. I want everyone who's listening, if you're going to be empowering your team to do this, give them a bit of a break because it's going to be hard for them. They may not know every drug and how it's spelled and what it even means. But if they get most of the information down and they get most of what the drug sounds like, or at least the way they can best spell it, that gives you some time to be able to look it up. Everybody's got an iPhone or some kind of Android phone or some phone that they can use to look up a drug real quick and get some information on it. But as I've often said in my lectures, you just need to know a little bit about the drug's class. It doesn't matter if you know how to spell lisinopril, but do you know lisinopril is an ACE inhibitor, can cause cough, and ultimately that can lead to patients having orthostasis and potentially dysgeusia. These are the little things that matter, but if you group drugs together in classes, it's going to make it a lot easier for you to piece that information together. So give your team a break. They may not know how to spell every drug, that's fine. But as long as you get the spelling roughly and you can look it up, that's half the battle right there.
I love it. I love it. And give a little piece. You call, like you use the word declassified. I want you to just describe, what does declassified mean when you do your training?
I'm going to tell you, Kirk, I started out as a pharmacist. Everybody knows that. I graduated from St. John's in New York City, and I'm going to be the first one to say I hated pharmacology. Absolutely hated it. As a pharmacist, all I wanted to do was put pills in a bottle and pour without looking, which today they call mixology, but back then, you know, it was pouring while looking at the customers and having a conversation. And so much so that I'll never forget the dean of the pharmacy school pulled me aside in my fourth year and said, hey, Viola, you know you have to know pharmacology to be a pharmacist, right? I said, what's your point? He said, your grades suck. And he was right, because I really didn't ever get pharmacology. So lo and behold, you know, some 10 years later, when I'm pretty much disgusted, you know, because I realized I didn't reach my full potential and went back and started teaching, that's when I started to love pharmacology, because I realized, holy cow, you really got to know how a drug works in order to have an appreciation for what it can do to not just the organ system you're targeting, but all the other organ systems that it might impact. And right. That's when it dawned on me, Kirk, and that's when I decided to take this up as a living, because until then, I never really got it.
Dude, you're the best at it, too. You are just the best at it. What's question number two or opportunity number two when it comes to medical history?
I like that opportunity. I might change it around, Kirk. I might give you credit for that and say it's opportunities.
There you go.
So opportunity number two is, why do you take it? Because I know, first off, there are medications that people can take that are used for different things. A good example would be a drug like Norvasc, a calcium channel antagonist, okay? I know that Norvasc is predominantly used for hypertension, right? But it can also be used to treat angina. It could also be used to treat arrhythmia. So wait a second. How do I know what that patient's taking that medication for? Because all I know is they say they take Norvasc. So now I have to ask, why do you take it? And the first reason is so that I know what I'm treating, okay, can be influenced. So if they're taking the Norvasc for hypertension, I don't got to worry about blood pressure and all that goes along with it. But if they're taking it for angina, well, that's a whole other treatment plan now. Now I'm going to worry about, you know, stress and maybe making sure the patient's oxygenated correctly. And then what if they're using it to treat arrhythmia? Well, then I got to worry about epinephrine and local anesthesia. So all of that tied together in one question. Why do you take it? So that you can lead me down whatever road I need to as far as treatment plan. But more importantly, I ask that question because I want to know if they know why they take the medication. A lot of people are over-medicated. I know that. People blame pharmacists for that. You pharmacists are always pushing pills. That's true. A lot of people are over-medicated. But is it because there's just more medications to take? Or are they really just taking one med that they don't need to take because they're taking another med that does the same thing? So I want to know, number one, about do they understand their medical history enough to know why they take their medication, what their conditions are, and is there buy-in? Because I will get a sense of compliance if a patient tells me, oh, I take that medication, my blood pressure, that's very important. Or, I don't know, the doc says I got to take that pill every day. That means a lot to me so that I know if they're taking Norvasc and their blood pressure in the cuff is high when I'm taking it right there in the office, I got to wonder, you know, did they take the medication? Because I know a lot of people who take blood pressure medications that don't take blood pressure medications. Wow. And so that's the lead into opportunity number three, which is, did you take it today? I want to know if you bought into your drug therapy and if you are compliant. If not, that's going to mess up my understanding of your vitals, and that's going to affect the treatment planning in so many different ways. But that all starts, Kirk, like you said, in the beginning, at the start of the appointment, before anybody lifts an instrument, what am I getting into with this patient? You know, is this going to be complicated or complex because of the patient's behaviors and their mentality and their attitude towards the meds? Or is it going to be because of something truly of dental origin?
Mm-hmm. From your experience, are patients pretty well, are they very transparent about this? Is it kind of in the middle, or are you kind of listening for all cues when you're asking these three questions?
It's right down the middle. And I'm happy in a way that it is, and sometimes I'm saddened by it. So I'm happy in that some patients understand the importance of knowing what their medical history is and their medications, and they're right on it, man. They tell you exactly what's wrong with them. They know what medications they take, and they know why they take it, and they can almost give you chapter and verse as to, you know, why it's important for you to know that. And that's great, and that's wonderful, because it helps me when I'm prescribing everything from, you know, over-the-counter pain relievers for them to treat their pain up to opioids. It helps me in prescribing antibiotics, helps me in picking out the right anesthetic agent, all the things that I do in practice. But it also helps me think beyond that, like, okay, so they know enough about their condition that if I did something today that can impact their systemic illness, they're going to let me know because they're knowledgeable. Yeah. And then I've got the other end of the spectrum, which is people don't know why they take medications. They know what medications they take. And therefore, I'm struggling because I almost feel like I have to educate them while I'm educating myself. And I'm not going to lie to you, Kirk. It's happened so many times in the clinic with my students. I'll say, you know, we took your blood pressure. It's kind of high. Do you take any blood pressure medication? Yeah, I think so. Which one? The blue one. Okay, well, that narrows it down. So now I've got a million choices to choose from. But the point is, it saddens me and makes me happy at the same time to know there are plenty of people out there that do know this stuff, but just as many, maybe if not more, of people who really don't know and really rely on us to help fill in the blanks.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Now, give us the State of the Union, because you've been doing this for a while. And, you know, it's the joke on this show where people are like, I'm doing this complex treatment plan. I get to know this patient. She's taking me through all her medications. And so she rolls out the piece of paper that has all of her the list of medications is getting longer. Yep. And this is not something that's going to go away or dry up in dentistry. And it's extremely complex. So as a young dentist, if you've got three decades of practice in front of you, this is going to be a very important part of you doing the right thing for the right people, right?
Couldn't have said it better. You know, I want to use 30 years as a good example. I can tell you 30 years ago when I first got started in dentistry as a specialty, I remember working in New York City and we had an intake form and it would list, you know, everything we had to ask. And at the bottom was the list of medications. And it was like literally five spaces at the bottom. And most times we didn't even fill in five, okay? Every so often, I'd get somebody who had more than five medications, and as the Brooklyner I was, I would say, really? You had to screw up my form? Now I got to start all over again. but that's me. Okay. Yeah. The point was, we've never really got people taking more than 5 minutes. Back then, if you had cardiovascular disease, you maybe took one or two drugs. If you had diabetes, you took maybe one drug, like diabetes, if you can remember that one. So, you know, it was very rare to have people taking a lot of meds. Now, cardiovascular disease alone, you could be taking 5, 6, maybe even 7 medications. Diabetes, you can be taking, you know, 5 or 6 medications. People say, why do you always pick on cardiovascular disease and diabetes? Well, you and I both know, Kirk, and everyone I'm sure listening knows that there's cardiovascular disease and diabetes and the inevitable triad that forms with periodontal disease and systemic inflammation, right? So I pick on those two because those are the things to me that matter most in dentistry. And people say, well, diabetes is only the 7th leading cause of death. No, diabetes should probably be number 4. It's just that a lot of people die of the complications of diabetes, but diabetes isn't listed as on their death certificate as the cause of death. So choose cardiovascular disease and diabetes and realize you got at least 12 to 13 meds right there. Now, add in some issues with your GI, like reflux, you know, heartburn, respiratory disease, especially if you're a smoker, central nervous system issues, like, you know, if you have anxiety or maybe you have difficulty sleeping. And all of a sudden, I can easily get up to 20 medications without even blinking. And that's the medically complex patient, because now all those medications interact with all those other medications, and every one of them, either individually or together, can have an impact on dental therapy.
Wow. Now, when you look at the medical history, obviously asking these three questions is going to change the way you completely interact with patients. But what other opportunities do we have with the medical history? You know, because you get to watch a lot of these. Any trends or things that are missed that are important for dental teams to know?
Yep. There's some basic medications that everyone has to know that we can pick from. So let me just go down the list and help as best I can in deciphering it. And you're right, Kirk, that's why I call it pharmacology declassified. I hated pharmacology, and then I realized how valuable it could be. So I made it my mission to declassify pharmacology, to take it from this uber complicated language and break it down into the meat and potatoes that we can use every day in practice. And here it comes, okay? If my patient has cardiovascular disease, one of the first questions I'm going to ask him is, when's the last time you had your cholesterol checked? Now, I say this and people say to me, what the heck does that have to do with anything? Who cares about their cholesterol? But cholesterol is everything, okay? If you understand how cholesterol works, you realize as animals, we make cholesterol for our muscles, right? So it provides lubrication. Okay, so for our muscle fibers. Okay, so therefore what? So you know as animals, we make it. And as, you know, omnivores, we eat it. So now we have twice as much cholesterol as an animal who just makes it, who eats grass, okay? So what? So if you're not using all that cholesterol, what's going to happen? It's going to collect on the inside of your arteries at some point because you're going to have more cholesterol than you can use. Okay, when the cholesterol collects on the inside of the arteries in the form of plaque, you get fatty tumors called atheromas, okay? People say, it's not a tumor. It is a tumor. It's called an atheroma. And it's all going to do one thing. It's going to take up space inside your artery. Well, trying to force more fluid through a smaller space means what? Increased pressure. And the inside of your arteries is rough now, so platelets flowing by are going to stick, and that's a form of thrombosis. And then with the increased pressure, your heart's trying to push harder, the back pressure is even more, so your heart pushes harder, and all of a sudden you may end up with arrhythmia or worse yet, ultimately down the line, congestive heart failure. So when I take a medical history, I said, when is your last cholesterol check? When's the last time you took your blood pressure or had someone take your blood pressure? What was your doc saying about the potential for clots? You have a positive family history for clots. Are you taking, ready, cholesterol medication, antihypertensives, anticoagulants, and antiplatelet agents? I've led that conversation now so the patient feels like, okay, you know what? I'm in a safe space. I can talk about this. It's not embarrassing because this guy just made me feel like everybody's got cardiovascular disease because everybody eats hamburgers. So in that way, I've opened up that conversation for them to feel easy about talking about this kind of stuff. But okay, right there, I've tied in a lot of avenues because, man, if the guy's on blood pressure medication, I got to worry about which one is going to be a calcium channel blocker that's going to cause gingival hyperplasia and orthostasis. Is it going to be a beta blocker? Now I have to worry about using, you know, epinephrine. Okay, I can do it down that road, okay? Then if what cholesterol medication are they taking? Because if they're taking medications that cause muscle pain, guess what? Everybody gets muscle pain from statins eventually. What muscles are involved? Calves, triceps, massers. Okay, so now do I have jaw pain because I have jaw pain from something of dental origin? Or do I have jaw pain because it's a side effect of my statin? And then what about anticoagulants? Or which one? Are you on Coumadin? Do you need an INR test and have you had done recently? Are you on Xarelto, Eliquis, or my favorite new drug, Cerveza, because it sounds like Cerveza? Do you take one of those medications? And so, okay, I don't need an INR, but I do need to know about how much of a bleeder you are. Do you get a lot of nosebleeds? When you cut yourself, do you bleed extensively? All of a sudden, I've opened up this conversation to the point where the patient can rapid fire questions. They can give me answers, and I'm filling in the blanks. And that's just cardiovascular disease. If I talk about diabetes, it's going to be, when was your last A1C? Do you even know what an A1C is? Okay. What was your last fasting blood glucose? Because I know, and you know, that's the thing. All the people listening right now took pharmacology, took anatomy and physiology. You know what it's like when you've got hyperglycemia, the friability of the blood vessels, the potential for micro and macrovascular complications. I know it sounds like I'm talking a mile a minute here, but that's how excited I get about this, Kirk, because you can really pin together a medical history in about 10 minutes and get a feel for not only the patient's overall physical state, but also their mental state when it comes to dealing with their physical state. If they can't take care of themselves on the medical side of things, what makes me think, or what makes you think, or anyone think they're going to take care of themselves as far as their oral care?
Right. You also have the potential. I mean, Tom, as you're talking, I mean, you're going to save some people's lives. You know, no different than an oral cancer screening. You might say, well, I'm not a pharmacist, but at some point, if you care enough about your patients, you're going to save a few lives. And young dentists always ask us the question, how can I really differentiate myself? Is it billboards? Is it digital dentistry? And I'm like, no, start caring. You know, there are practices that fix teeth and there are people that change lives. And you got to, you know, they're not the same business. One screams, I care. One screams, I'm just looking to do dentistry. And so this is an important component of relationship-based dentistry for a long time, right?
Couldn't have said it better, Kirk. You know, the bottom line is, I've said this 1,000 times. I teach hygienists, I teach dentists, and I tell them the same thing. I've never met a group of people that diagnose more illnesses, more diverse illnesses, than dentists and hygienists. People don't look at you as diagnosticians, but the thing is, this is a window to this. And you see certain spots on the inside of their mucosa and say, you know, I wonder, I read about that. Or Viola, that guy talked about that being a side effect of a statin that patients take. Or, you know, he said that that could mean an issue with their cholesterol and it's being out of control. Or I took their blood pressure 3 times and there's no good reason for someone to have hypertension in your chair. There's a lot of excuses. I'll give them to you. Ready? There's 3 of them. Number 1, the patient doesn't know they have hypertension. Number 2, they're taking medication, but they're taking the wrong ones. 3, they're taking their medications, but they don't take their medications. So if they have hypertension in your chair, you have an opportunity at that moment to say, hey, wait a second, something's not right here. So you can diagnose without technically diagnosing conditions because you've been able to give that patient the kind of care that they really need that maybe they're not getting. And the greatest reward I've ever had is when hygienists who are my students or dentists who are my students can come to me and say, you're not going to believe this, Dr. Viola, but I had this guy in my chair. He usually goes see some other doc in town or usually, you know, visit some other hygienist, but they came to me and we did a full workup and they walked away and they went to the front desk and they say, I don't care what you do. I want him or her the next time as my dentist or hygienist. I don't want anybody else to treat me. I want them. I don't care how long I have to wait. And that, when they say that to me, that makes me feel good, but I know it makes them feel good too, because you want to differentiate yourself. It's not about marketing. It's not about promoting yourself. It's about giving such good care that that patient has no alternative in their mind but to see you again and again.
Yeah, Tom, as you're talking, I'm thinking, gosh, what an incredible opportunity for a team meeting with your team to do some learning. And, you know, you hear from dentists all the time. They're like, oh, I don't do team meetings anymore because it's just a complaint session. I mean, this could be a really guided learning experience where everybody comes together. And especially as a dentist, you're going to employ a lot of people in your course of your career. And how do we get them all up to speed about what these things are in a moving target like pharmacology. So it's an awesome opportunity. What else is important that we should know when it comes to this valuable tool in a dental office? Anything else that you'd say, look, you guys should really pay attention to this when it comes to medical history?
A lot of people aren't happy when I talk about it, but it's a necessity. It has to be done, right? You have to have the conversation about substances. Kirk, I'm the first one to tell you, you know, I've had colleagues of mine, friends of mine who, you know, not only know someone who's had a substance abuse issue, but actually maybe had one themselves. I completely get why substances are a part of our daily life and how they influence our lives, but at some point you have to ask. And that's because substance abuse has an effect on dental therapy. And I know you've probably heard this 1,000 times, but it's an awkward and sort of an uneasy conversation to have. But you've got to ask your patients straight out, do you have now or have you had a history of substance use? Well, you don't want to use the word abuse. You don't want to use addict. Don't. Just say substance use and just let them give you a positive yes or no, an affirmative or negative. Because that way, once that happens, then all the walls come down. And then you can have the conversation like, I'm not the police. I'm not here to report you to anybody. I'm not here to write anything down. I just want to know, because knowing is going to make me more informed by designing your treatment planning and knowing what's going to be safe for you and not safe for you. But if I don't know, it could be harmful. So again, tell me everything. I just want to know. Now, give me some idea, Viola, what kind of substances? Well, I don't think I have to tell anybody here that cannabis, marijuana, has become a big issue in the United States. And I'm not saying that in the pejorative sense. I'm saying it's an issue socially, economically, you know, legally. So I want to know if my patient uses cannabis, but maybe they don't want to tell me. Okay, well, no, I'll smell it on them. I would like to think you could still do that. But with the advent of vaping and dabbing and all cannabis extracts, your patient could be using cannabis and you wouldn't even know it. Okay, well, why do I care if I need to know? I don't need to know about cannabis. But you do, because cannabis has effects on dentistry that a lot of people aren't aware of. For example, cannabis can cause hypertension. Cannabis can cause tachycardia. Cannabis can cause immunosuppression. Well, okay, I couldn't think of 3 bigger things to worry about in dentistry than that. Give me some other substances. Okay, how about the fact that patients vape, not just cannabis, but nicotine and the physical act of vaping? Think about it. Vape cartridges instilled in vape pens means when you hit that heating element and breathe in that aerosol, by the way, it's not really a vapor, you're blasting the inside of your mouth, especially the tissues of the palate, which can least afford it. You're blasting it with a vapor that can be, you know, 350 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Imagine the morphologic changes you can expect in the mouth just from the heat alone. And then there's numerous studies that have said vaping on its own, forget the cannabis or the nicotine, but the vaping itself can damage endothelial tissue. There's heavy metals. There's known carcinogens and toxins. Even the flavors, for God's sake, can cause problems. Like the best one I can come up with is diacetyl, which is a flavor that's normally used in vape cartridges to give it like a butter flavor. But that, over the course of time, can cause a condition called bronchiolitis obliterans, mostly known as popcorn lung. Well, all that matters to me, because I realize now that vaping, whether it's cannabis or nicotine, vaping can cause not just changes in our systems, but also in the mouth. And we're not even touching the surface. What about stimulants like methamphetamine and cocaine and the fact that they can make you resistant to anesthetic agents? Marijuana, cannabis can make you resistant to anesthetic agents. Okay, now I got to worry about anesthesia being an issue. Okay, cannabis can make you immunosuppressed. Well, let's face it, there are a lot of stimulants out there like MDMA that can make you immunosuppressed. Okay, now, love you guys, but let's face it. We work in a cesspool, okay? We work in an environment that's rich with bacteria, viruses, fungi, and we're opening wounds in that bacteria, so in that cavity. So in other words, wow, all of a sudden, I've got the opportunity for infection. Believe me, those bugs, if they get a foothold, are going to grab it. And so forget medications and over-the-counter drugs. If you just focus on the substances, there's enough to have a lengthy conversation about what substances the patient uses, how often do they use it, and what the impact on dentistry is going to be. And I teach 3 hours in my 3-hour CE course on exactly that, on street drugs, what the names are, what to look for. just recently over the weekend, I was at a study club and I put up some pictures on the slides of different cannabis dosage forms, you know, what's available out there, extract. And I would say 90%, if not more, of the audience had no idea that what I was showing them was a cannabis extract. Why? It didn't look green and it didn't look like it came from a plant. But that's the point. So it's important for us to know that our patients are using substances and what those substances can mean as far as overall systemic health and impacts on dentistry.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen some of Tom's other work, you have to check it out, because in the COVID conference, you did some snippets for us and it was really powerful. Not even being a dental professional, you learned so much about the abuse aspect and even how kids were crushing some of these prescription medications and not even using them for their real uses. I mean, you took us through the ins and outs of all that stuff, and it is a huge deal in the United States. So you're going to be saving your patients, but you also might be saving a friend, a family member, just by noticing some of these patterns. Because again, this is a very big deal.
Yep. And again, I'm sure you know, Kirk, opioids are a big deal. You know, a lot of people blame dentists for the opioid crisis. I get this all the time, you know. Why don't you tell these dentists to stop prescribing opioids? You had like 700 people in your audience yesterday and you didn't tell any one of them to stop prescribing opioids. I'm not going to tell dentists how to prescribe, number one, because it's not my job. They earn those prescribing privileges. They should be able to use them. But there'll always be a place at the table for opioids in dentistry because, look, I could talk all day long, and you know I do, Kirk, about ibuprofen and acetaminophen to treat odontogenic pain. But at the end of the day, when you have significant pain, you need an opioid. Okay, so why do people blame dentists? Because, and it happened in my own family, so I can tell you, dentists prescribe opioids to an adolescent who takes the opioid, gets addicted, and leaves a lifetime of opioid addiction and potentially dies of respiratory depression. It's horrific. It's tragic. It happened to me. It should never happen to anyone's family, okay? Over 100 Americans die every day of opioid-induced respiratory depression. But I know plenty of people addicted to opioids who never got a script from a dentist. And I know plenty of kids who got prescriptions for opioids from orthopedic docs because of sports injuries. So to kind of whitewash the entire dental industry and say, you know, it's your the fault of the opioid, it's not us. We didn't cause the opioid epidemic, but we should still be cognizant of the fact that the epidemic exists and we have to be appropriate on prescribing. And that means things like, you know, using the PDMP. Every state's got one, right? Go look up the patient. I don't have time. Make time, okay? Because it's that important. Again, good team, right? Have your team, if your state allows it, have your team look the people up. You know who's on the schedule that day. Go look them up. Make sure you know every controlled substance they take so that you not only know if you can prescribe an opioid, but also what other impact it could have on the rest of the day in that patient's treatment. Well, I'm only going to give them 3 days worth. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard that, because it's not the 3 days worth of opioid you prescribed. It's the fact that you're giving them 3 days worth of opioid, but they're taking gabapentin. And gabapentinoids combined with opioids cause more respiratory depression. They use marijuana. Okay, so cannabis, marijuana, plus opioids increase risk of respiratory depression. They're taking a benzodiazepine either recreationally or you know, legitimately for anxiety. Increased risk of respiratory depression. So it's those little things you don't know that we originally started this conversation on, and what don't you know about your patient that could impact that patient's care. It's little things like that matter the most. But if not that, to finish my thought from before, let's say it's not cardiovascular disease. Let's say it's not diabetes. How about proton pump inhibitors used for GERD, okay? Patient takes an over-the-counter drug like Tagamet. Tagamet, cimetidine, is one of the very few drugs on the planet, I think, that interacts with lidocaine to make lidocaine last longer to cause more side effects. I don't think anybody really knows that information, but Tagamet's out there because Zantac is on worldwide recall and Pepcid's being, you know, disappearing like toilet paper because people know it could be used for COVID-19 symptoms. So, okay, I take this harmless medication that I get at Target, right, for my heartburn, not realizing that the medication I'm taking can actually impact my anesthetic. I mean, I didn't even tell the doc or the hygienist I'm taking this medication because it's not even a medication. I buy it over the counter. So that's why you say, what do you take, right? Okay, but what else? Let's say I take Tagamet or I take Prilosec. both of those medications interfere with stomach acid production. So that means you can't absorb as much calcium. Well, that means you don't have normal bony homeostasis. So that can lead to early implant failure. And I just had a conversation over the weekend with the doc at the study club. And he's like, you know what, Viola? I never knew that. I've got all these cases of where I don't know why the implant failed within the first 4 to 6 weeks. And you just told me that a drug for heartburn can have an impact. That's the kind of stuff that matters. Pharmacology is more important than you thought it was in school. This is not your dad or your mom's pharmacology. This is the stuff you bring to work every day and say, I'm going to be that practitioner, the smart guy or gal who knows the patient's medications and knows what I'm up against so that I don't have to find out later that something I could have eliminated before would have a positive impact on treatment planning. And that's what I'm hoping for, not just reactive, proactive.
Buddy, this is so powerful. And like I said, I'm going to have you back again and again and again on all these topics. Any last thoughts on this important tool and getting to know more about your patients before we wrap up?
The last thought I have for you is a somber one. And that is, you know, in addition to the speaking and the teaching, I serve a lot of times as an expert witness for firms where dentists and hygienists are having litigation against them. I don't really work for the prosecution. Most of the time when the prosecutors call me, I say, no hablo ingles. Like, leave me alone, okay? I'm not going to work for you to prosecute somebody. I work for the defense. But the saddest thing about it is I have to tell these docs and these hygienists, the facts I'm giving you now, when it's too late, if they'd known it before and they would have done those things, maybe it would have changed the outcome. But now I have to tell them after the fact, and we have to come up with some rationale for why. And it's really hard to tell a jury, for example, why you didn't ask about their medications or why you didn't take their blood pressure, right? Little things like that matter so much in the big scheme of things that it's not litigation. It's not a litigious veil I'm trying to put over everything. What I'm trying to say is it's all about good patient care. Make them love you. Make them want to come back to see you over and over again because you gave them the kind of care that nobody else wants, and avoid this situation where you've got to explain yourself afterwards. I'm there to help you. I'll always be there to help you. I'll always be on your side. But it's important what you do in advance. And how you treat the patient and expect good outcomes and avoid situations where you need to see me wearing my suit.
Yeah. Tom, this is such good stuff. Now, I want people to find, I know people are going to be listening to this going, how do I find out more about it? You've got your online education stuff that you do. Tell them where, I put a link in there. If you're listening, you'll be able to see all this in the show notes. But if I want to learn more about Tom Viola, where do I find you? How can you help me as a dentist?
I came up with a really creative name for my website. It's called TomViola.com. So, I mean, listen, I take full credit for it. That was my idea, okay? So check me out. It's my name, TomViola.com. Yes, Pharmacology Declassified is the name of the company that I founded for this purpose, right, to declassify pharmacology. But to make it simple, you can type in anything you want, TomViola.com, PharmacologyDeclassified.com, whatever, and you'll find me. What's on that website? Well, I try to make it chock full of resources. So there's my blog on there, which has, daily topics on or weekly topics on dental pharmacology. What's new and exciting? What did you miss maybe? Because, the life cycle on news when it comes to pharmacology and new facts is almost an eye blink, right? If you're not careful, you're going to miss it. Check out my podcast and great stuff like this with Kirk, which I love. And how about some of the videos I put up there as well? By all means, pay attention, listen, soak it all in, right? Then you have my continuing education courses there. I am a certified provider of continuing education through the AGD. So take some courses via my website and get your credits on demand anytime or 3 hours before the midnight deadline. Either way, okay, you can get your courses online. But more important, beyond my website, follow me on social media. It's under everything's Pharmacology Declassified. So whether it's Instagram, Facebook, doesn't matter. It's all Pharmacology Declassified. I know because I wanted you to type as many letters as possible. No, because that's the name of the company. But at least follow along with me because I'm trying to post often on information that I'm going to think is valuable to you in practice. And I look forward to seeing you. But hey, if you work as a meeting planner, if you belong to a study club, and you'd like me to come out and do a presentation on any one of the topics we talked about, I've got 17 different courses, I'm happy to come out. Give me a jingle. Call me up, send me an email. I'll come out and I'll give you 3, 4, 5, how many hours you like on the topic. I can tell you this much. I can guarantee it. You're going to love the topic. You're going to love the information because it's all applicable and practical to your daily life as a professional.
Yeah, and I'll second that. You're going to love it and you're going to enjoy it too because you'll make this stuff fun learning, which is important with adults for sure. So, Tom, I am so grateful to call you my friend, have you on here. And again, we're going to have you back again and again and again. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show or listening to the Best Practice Show, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see from Tom or other guests. And you're going to see, we're going to line them up. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.